Is he puckering the whole time? The Baldwin thing, I can't even watch like the imitation because I hate the still image of his face making the like the little kissy face or like end of the hot dog where they tie it up mouth that he does.
Yeah,
like,
he's doing. Yeah, he's doing the your face. He's doing. It's not Trump, but he's like, what would you do if I was here right now? Ha ha.
Yeah.
You guys, do you know what he did at the end of the last episode?
You're welcome.
He held up his hand and said, "You're welcome."
You're welcome. Like me, he honestly thinks that taking time out of his not busy schedule to be on SNL in a city he lives in anyway, like, you know, 10 times a year, is such like an emotional sacrifice on his behalf.
I feel
like he did for us to rid us of, to remind us that, in fact, the Orange Man was bad so that we would vote against him.
I think spending even 30 seconds in Alec Baldwin's brain would drive a normal person mad.
Oh, God.
I don't think that. I saw him one time when I was coming back from recording the Deadcast. I was walking up Fifth Avenue in Lower Manhattan, like across the street from that movie theater around Union Square. And he was holding a toddler and he looked really mad, but he was holding the toddler in the most, like, it's not even a way that you would teach or not teach someone. He was holding a kid, like a 3-year-old, like it was a slice of pizza on a paper plate. Like he just had his hand flat and the kid was just sitting, the kid's ass was here. And it was like a chair.
David,
and he looked really upset.
Alec Baldwin and Morrissey had the same thing happen to them where they were both like two of the hottest guys alive. And then they had that thing that happens to all Irishmen where their torso just turned into a blister.
Yeah.
Just their head got really big. And for Alec Baldwin, the way to solve that was to get really into liberal politics and call his daughter a pig. And for Morrissey, Morrissey actually got really good politics.
Yeah. He's still working it out, but he's proof that you can succeed in the, by becoming wider as you age.
I was going to say, with regards to Alec Baldwin's toddler holding technique, I mean, similar to a piece of pizza, if someone hands you a toddler, like a slice of pizza, you'll have to like often hold them upside down or blot them with a napkin to soak up the excess grease that is often...
The real New York way, the way we do it here, you fold the child.
In the original intro to Louie... He is eating a toddler. It was produced by the Podesta Group.
Real quick before we start, I mean, like, we brought up Nicolas Cage. Guess what movie we watched this weekend? Catherine had never seen it. That's right, Con Air.
Hell yes.
One of the best action movies of the 90s. Probably, as you said, Matt, the best Michael Bay movie not directed by Michael Bay.
And yep.
I think Catherine nailed it when she said, like, this was Con Air is, this is the one thing we didn't want to happen, the movie.
Yep.
Yeah.
We got all the terrifyingest criminals together on one plane, and now they're in charge. Oh boy,
it's crazy to think that used to be a model for doing movies. Like, just like get some recognizable actor, and then just like the 10 best and most engaging character actors alive, and be like, all right, like at some point you're going to be in a bus accident. We haven't figured out what else happens yet, and then just like let them rock.
That's the thing about like that's the secret of Bay and the Bay style, of which this is the exemplar. Is that one of the big things that props it up in the absence of, you know, story or plausibility or character development is the good actors, the good craggy character actors who fill out the rest of the cast. Bay in particular gets performances, like real for the rafters performances, from people who checked out in every other film they've been in 20 years. If anyone has seen the last Transformers movie, Sir Anthony Hopkins is in that. And if anyone has seen an Anthony Hopkins movie since like 2000, he is checked the fuck out. He is at like Robert De Niro level. And in this movie, he is like a shrieking baboon. He's like going for the rafters. It's like, I'm assuming that this is just because Michael Bay just screams into their face with a megaphone. One way or another, it makes for engaging film.
I have an idea for a movie like that that we can do during the second year of the first Biden term. And my scenario for this movie, and like you can pick the actors, like maybe even bring back Nicolas Cage, have the guy who played Chris Hansen or Robert Hansen in Breach in this movie.
Chris Cooper.
Yeah,
Chris Cooper. Yeah. So It would be about a giant shark that only attacks religious and ethnic minorities. And it would be about the government trying to deal with this problem and the issues that arise from it.
You know that Michael Bay is producing this for, I think, Netflix next year, a movie about what if COVID became super deadly and killed like 75% of the population?
Yeah, it's got the it's got Archie, like hot yes. Archie from the Sex yeah. Archie show.
KJ Apa.
Yep. Peter Stormare. And again, with the fucking Michael Bay thing, like just getting like the craziest actors and being yeah. like, the script is not bad.
I mean, like,
but it's not finished. And then
you
just
talk about hyper normalizing things. Like, this thing is still happening and it's not stopping at all. It's like, in fact, worse than it ever was. And no one has any hope that it's going to change. And they're making a movie like, yeah, but what if that thing that was, wow, that thing, what if it was worse? It's like, it's still happening, dude. Yeah.
Like, you think
it's
Matt,
like
Matt,
if Michael Bay ran out into, like, the fucking Plaza 9/11 with a camera and started filming the rubble and, like, turning that into the Transformers movie.
Matt, like, when Michael Bay was pitching this COVID lockdown movie, it was probably in, you know, March of this
yeah.
year. And he was like, okay,
yeah.
here's the picture of the movie. Imagine 9 to 10 months from now, all of this shit is still going on. Nothing's changed, and we still have to deal with it. Imagine that dystopian future.
Imagine that horrible reality that could. They were trying to make a dystopia, and it's like you undershot our ability to dystopiaize things, dude.
All the cultural products that were pitched and accepted in like spring when it seemed like this was at its worst are going to be like the most, like the idea that Andrew Cuomo has a book about how we beat COVID.
It's yeah.
like, oh, that's awesome.
In stores now, you know,
you can buy that thing. What you can read that like while you're in your second lockdown, which is going to happen.
What if you open that book and it's just like 2019, they told me that all the nursing homes in New York were overpopulated.
You know, it's
but,
true. There's
but like, I had a solution.
You know what it's like? It's the strange discordance of culture that's coming out now. Shit that was greenlit 1 to 2 years ago and timed for the election. Like they thought the Comey rule would be this, you know, this big triumphant TV event to coincide with Biden getting elected president.
So we've already talked about Breach, and you just brought up the Comey rule. Can we do a Billy Ray like appreciation?
Shattered glass.
Here? Because I watched some of the Comey rule because I'm a fucking pervert, and also because I can't see my friends anymore. So TV is, it's one of my closest buddies now. We bond over whatever it
you
shows
can see
me.
Your friends, Mueller, Jim Comey, the lady.
All of, yeah, so this is, yeah.
All of your friends right there on.
I consider them more
the
like heroes or mighty minor gods. Well, all the people that Trump like whines about are in the movie, like T.R. Knight from, the early Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, Grey's Anatomy.
But he plays like Peter Stroke or like somebody that I've known as like a punchline from like tweets where they're like the lovely Miss Lisa. And like all of Trump's people know who that is. And I'm like, was that like Macho Man Randy Savage's girlfriend? Like, I don't remember who you're talking about. But so I watched
the lovely Lisa Page.
So Comey rule is like 75%. It's watchable in the way that all Billy Ray movies are, where it's like just people that look tired in like drop ceiling sets in DC, like being upset with each other. The Brendan Gleeson performance as Trump in that is fantastic.
It's so good.
I loved
it's
it.
So
like,
good.
I don't recommend watching the rest of the series, but he is a monster.
Yeah, horrifying.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And they really want to get at like the fact that Trump's imposition into the world of DC is really one of manners. He is a grotesque figure. It is really like Caddyshack. I mean, we said that like 4 years ago, but this is essentially a dramatic remake of Caddyshack. And he's Rodney Dangerfield showing up at Bushwood.
This whole place sucks. That's right, it sucks. Only reason I'm here is maybe I'll buy it.
And so they have to like emphasize the physical grotesqueness of Trump. And he just gets it with the breathing.
Yeah.
Oh God.
it's the same thing with the like all the best imitations. Like basically, I mean the famous like the interview with the James Austin Johnson. I'm forgetting his name. The guy that's like the king.
Yes, that's it.
Yes.
Where he was like, yeah, you have to like get a lot of mucus in there, and like I like to get my glottis swollen. Like you have to like physically get sick to do a good Trump imitation.
Yourself, you have to like drink a lot of milk right beforehand. get a nice phlegmy throat.
That's what I thought about, like, when it, like, thinking about, like, physically being Donald Trump. It's like, he's probably had what's felt like a low-level cold for 40 years.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he just wakes up every day with, like, a sodium-induced headache.
Yep.
And, like, just some type of, like, And I always thought, you know, they do it in the movie, but I always thought about this when Trump, like, made Comey take that picture with him. I was like, what does it feel like to, like, pat the back of Donald Trump?
Oh, God. Yeah. So, oh, I just imagined, like, he's personally clammy and yet somehow covered in baby powder.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, I feel like it's a weird combination of, like, softness that shouldn't be there.
Yep.
Some weird things that are hard, not hard like a bone, but hard like congealed fat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like there are certain scents that are way too minty.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like strange. All this, cause all the shit that he uses for like grooming or for like freshening his breath is like discontinued 80s products. Like he has like a storage facility full of like the like pale, like blue Tic Tacs that they like stopped being able to sell when like George H.W. Bush was president. And yeah, but I feel like Trump definitely would have like a wet laundry feel, and not like out the dryer, but like
bag, yeah.
Washer, the washer to dryer segment of laundry yeah. is what you're dealing with there.
Yes.
Okay. Welcome. It's Chopo, everybody. In case you haven't figured it out already, it's me, Will, here with Matt, Felix, and Virgil. And joining us today is longtime fan favorite, David Roth. David, how's it going?
I'm good, man. How are you?
We're all doing good. You know, I guess we wanted to have you on and check in because, you know, we're working hard now to stop the steal. Every show now we're doing is about stopping the steal.
That's great, man. Supporting That's all you
can do. Supporting the Million MAGA March and just that we all know that, like, look, Trump is going to be inaugurated in January. I mean, like, do you honestly think that Trump didn't have a plan for this? Do you honestly think there's not a plan in motion right
you,
now?
You have to hashtag trust the plan. Have
he
not
saw
you been
this
paying
stuff
attention?
Coming. Yeah. See, I've been like watching the transition from Q to E has been really exciting for me just to see the next stage of where this is all actually going. Do you all know about the E thing? This is
I think it's
like E from Entourage is taken over from Q?
It's Mark Esper, right?
It is. No, it's supposed to be Ezra Cohen Watnick. Who's like some
oh,
loyal
guy.
Again, it's another what? Like like a Peter Stroke, Lisa Page level dude where like only the real heads know about Ezra Cohen Watnick.
From Vampire Weekend?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's changed a lot in the past couple of years. Ezra Cohen Watnick is like he's a DOD swamp creature. He's the protege of Michael Adeen, who's an Iran hawk and Gladio.
Oh, that
stooge.
Guy! Oh,
wait, yeah. Wait a minute! I'm confused. I thought these guys were defeating the swamp monster of intervention.
Well, it's like a vaccine. You have to inject a little bit of Gladio in your blood to beat Gladio.
It seems like you need to get up to speed on the white hat, black hat dynamic that exists in the psychotic mind realms. Yeah.
Trump has to do a little bit of pedophilia to get himself in with the other pedophiles.
Yeah, it's like how sometimes if you're deep cover like with a criminal organization, you might have to like shoot heroin to show them you're not a cop.
It's true.
It's the same thing for Trump with Adrenochrome.
Yep.
I mean, there's just been like a reshuffling of tons of guys in the cabinet since after the election. The guy they had replace Esper on his first day walking into the Pentagon, he checked if his fly was open in front of everyone and then tripped over the steps to the Pentagon. It's like on video. It's
I love just metaphor being murdered in front of me.
It's
every
incredible.
Day.
Well, they're definitely down. It's like a full employment plan for anyone that's ever said anything nice about Trump on Twitter now. Like they're going to like hire Jack Del Rio away from the Washington football team to like spend 3 weeks running the FBI just because
Absolutely.
He's been very supportive.
Tito Ortiz just got elected to
elected official
city council, and he's going to have like a week where he can be Secretary of State,
which is great. Representing
it's
going to
be awesome.
Well, I mean, this is the question that you know we're considering today is you know what now for Trump? You know, I think we're already sort of a little bit starting to miss him. You know, missing our boy, and
I'm already feeling it. You know, I already feel it. Like I actually saw someone. They did a side-by-side, I think this is one of those, that guy Aaron Rupar, one of those like resistance dudes who just tweets about how terrible Trump is all the time. Basically Margaret Dumont getting the pies in the face every day by the horror of Trump. And he did a side-by-side of the of Trump and Biden responding to the announcement of the shuttle that went up or whatever the fuck happened.
The SpaceX launch. Yeah, it was a NASA SpaceX launch.
Oh, don't you love
night.
A good private partnership?
Yeah.
When we don't. Yeah. And Trump replied, he said, when I got it, NASA was a washed up dump. Now
it's the hottest.
It's the hottest
aerospace
hub. And next to that was Biden going, today's momentous event is a tribute to both the public spirit of NASA as well as the private people. Yeah. And congratulations to the and he said compare and contrast as though we're supposed to read that and not think, yeah, one of these guys is hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one of these guys is cool and one of these guys is a fucking square.
Well,
this guy just he just literally said not hot Graydon Carter's Oscar parties.
I know.
Hot NASA. Thanks to me.
Barack Obama's failing NASA program has a problem. Its shuttle program is no longer hot.
I think Biden himself is incredibly funny, but the problem is we're never going to see actual Joe Biden.
Yes, because he's not going to be tweeting it all day. He's not going to be his central nervous system is not going to be wired to the internet. Well, we're going to get more of the Reagan thing where the president's clearly declining and a puppet of others, but he's also fully aware of himself and his role as a puppet. And so he's going to hit his marks, keep his mouth shut, let them, you know, lead him around and feed him juice boxes to keep him quiet. And we're never going to get just his minute by moment ego just exploding out into the cosmos. It's going to be, but when he is funny, it's going to be very funny as well.
Yeah, because it's going to be
because it'll be more concentrated.
Take like a weird Blarney break during them. Although he won't break with the script the way that Trump does. Like Trump always needs to add like a little actorly bit of business to every script that he's given to like merely make it pop. Which is why he'll like the best moments to me at the end from the rallies were when he'd be talking about something that you know just like deep Trumpiana, like weird enemies list stuff or like. A time that like Lonnie Anderson like winked at him and it definitely wasn't an accident or something like that. And then he would have to hit the transition back to the script at the end of it. And he'd be like, so that's definitely one of the reasons why we're making sure that the border is not like just a place where anybody can drive across. Lonnie Anderson would have understood that, of course. But like he has to try to like steer back off the like out of the gulch and back onto the road. Whereas Trump Biden will never leave the road.
Yeah, he's. I think about my favorite Trump performance is when he pretended not to know that Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, and he like closed his eyes very theatrically. That was like Biden will never do stuff like that. But all Biden's funny shit is when he's in reverie of something that happened 60 years ago.
Yeah, he gets to the memory loop.
Or when he has like a dementia explosion and turns into Betty Draper's dad when anyone asks him a tough question.
Oh, yes.
Like, why, man?
Hold on now, you slap-happy jackal!
Like, everyone forgot this, but, like, he did say, look fat, and challenge the guy to a push-up contest.
That rules.
Like, that was awesome.
That was amazing. That was awesome.
There was a period of time where I thought that was going to be his strategy against Trump.
Yeah.
Where he would like in the debates that like Trump would get up there and be like, I've owned every type of car, like in all the different colors that you can have it. And then Biden would be like, I would love to see you try to do a chin up. And that would just be, it would be like grandpa fights.
I expected that because it was like that stuff. People actually like that stuff. Like if you watch the
that's why they didn't do it.
Yeah.
If you watch the Look Fat video, it's like everyone in that crowd is just a completely stationary octogenarian. And when Biden goes, listen, look, fat, you want to do a push-up right now, man? They're just like humming in approval. They're like bees.
Yeah, they love it.
They're just like, woo!
But that's the thing. The Democrats, because they're the party of the superego, they have to turn away from all that works, like works at a political level, and turn it into an abstraction. They have to turn it into like, no, I'm going to be the center of decency for the good middle-class people. Who want everyone to turn down the volume?
Because no one agreed with me on this. But that first Biden Trump debate, I thought like I think one of the reasons it was so close may have been that debate. Like they should have had Biden call Trump fat at that debate, and instead he was just like, "You're a nincompoop, buddy."
I mean, like it sucked. He could have like totally he could have tried to out alpha Trump. And that could have actually just thrown the whole thing into a tizzy. I think that's possible.
Yeah,
but
he was watching that Jeb Bush game tape.
Yep,
kind of the right way to chortle at him.
Because these guys are all last year's model. Like the person who's going to defeat Trump is not going to come from within the political order that he overturned. You know what I mean? Like it's going to come from something that emerges after it and in response to it.
Well. As long as you're talking about things that work for Trump, I'd like to touch briefly on just like, you know, where he's at now with these like series of lawsuits. Because I mean, like, over the weekend, he referred to Biden as president elect. No, he didn't say president elect. He said Biden won the election because of X, Y, and Z. And then everyone was like, oh, he's conceding. And then he just showed up 90 minutes later to be like, I'm not conceding anything. I won the election. So, I mean, he's still going forward with that. They had the sort of the million MAGA march in D.C. this weekend. But I'm just interested in these lawsuits in these states where he's seeking to overturn the results from. And I was wondering if someone can explain this to me, because, like, as best I can understand it, even if these lawsuits are allowed to proceed by a judge, or like if they prevail in court, you're still, like, what is being alleged is still talking about like a number of votes that, even if they were all declared fraudulent, would not come close to overturning the results in any of the states.
Yeah.
But what I'm hearing now, although like a lot of these people seem to be suggesting or hinting at, is this idea that the Republican governors of these states can appoint their own electors to the Electoral College, who will then vote for Trump in opposition to
It's not the governors; it's the
state legislature.
State legislatures. Okay, so state legislatures can appoint their own electors to the Electoral College, which is
that was the original way it worked in the Constitution.
I actually remember this particular rationalization from 2016 too.
Yep, though. Faithless electors, like they have to stop this. They have to take. They have to think of what's best for the country and stop this.
As I recall, there was like a letter writing campaign, and then the one faithless elector was like a Democrat that voted for Trump. Like, he got like one more electoral vote than he was supposed
to. There was an SNL sketch where Hillary Clinton played the guy in Love Actually with the
the cards, the cue cards? The Bob Dylan kind of thing.
And it was in front of an elector's house, and she was like making the pitch for her to, you know, just vote for Hillary, because come on, Trump's crazy.
But I mean, see the joke there.
I just like, is this a thing that could happen that works?
No,
it's not going to happen. I mean, like in Michigan, they already said like, no, we're not doing that dumb shit.
Wouldn't it like if they do sub in new electors to the Electoral College, don't they by default have to vote for the winner of the popular vote?
No. It's the question. There's two different questions here. Will it happen? The answer is no. Could it happen? Is there a legal theory behind it? Yes, absolutely.
Right.
According to the congressional statute from the 19th century that governs all of this shit, the state legislatures are empowered to appoint their own slate of electors in the event of a bad election. What that means is not defined by statute. So theoretically, you could take the Republican, they have a huge Republican legislature in Pennsylvania. They have a huge majority there because of gerrymandering. They could say, okay, well, this election was fraudulent. You know, it's a bad election. We reject all the results. We're just going to pick the electors ourselves, and we're going to pick Trump electors and then send those to Congress. And then the conflict would be the governor of Pennsylvania, who's a Democrat, will, no matter what, certify the election for Biden and then send his slate of electors.
So it's two electors.
That it would
show
becomes
up.
Comes yeah.
And that's a classic sitcom premise right there. Two sets of electors show up for the same state.
It's nice to know that episodes of Three's Company were a good preparation for figuring out what would happen in the 2020 election. But like some scenario where John Ritter is trying to get somebody to hide in the bathroom. That's basically how you choose a president.
And I believe in that case, wouldn't it then be, I mean, all right, so if they can't figure out, if that doesn't work, either way, it goes to the House of Representatives. But two sets of electors from each state, some of these states show up. Who then decides which one is to be recorded?
So that's where it gets very complicated. Basically, this statute doesn't explain that. It's up to Congress to suss it out.
Oh, okay. So in this case, then Congress would just...
But basically, here's what would happen. Here's what would happen. My guess is by default, the electors appointed by the Democrat governor, you know, properly certified, those are the ones that would end up getting submitted to the floor of Congress during the joint session on January 6th when they count the electoral votes. And then it would be up to the Republicans, at least one in the House and one in the Senate, to object to those electors. Then both houses, they separate and they debate the objection for up to 2 hours, and then they vote on it. What complicates things, of course, is that no matter what happens in the Georgia special elections, Republicans will continue to control the Senate in that special session because Mike Pence, you know, is still vice president. He'll still preside over it. The open question is, what happens if the House says, well, you know, no, this is a frivolous objection. You know, we accept the Biden electors. And the Senate says we accept the objection. No, there's no guidance from either precedent or, you know, the letter of law.
Wouldn't getting to that ridiculous point be like basically the legal strategy of Trump and his campaign? Because don't they want more than anything the Supreme Court to decide this?
Basically, yeah. I mean, as much, you know, because he lost the election is the thing. So all he can really do is gum up the works and create as much chaos and, you know, use the outmoded nature of this system, the Byzantine nature of it, to find entry points in which they could, you know, maybe tip the scales in their favor. But again, this is very, very extreme. It won't happen because this would require, to actually get to this point, would require a level of coordination.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, this is definitely one of those things where, like, Trump's natural instinct to just, like, stay up for three straight days complaining online, like, kind of almost looks like it could, like, militate towards a specific end that's, like, you know, reasoned and, like, has this, you know, sort of a linear process. But, like, it certainly does not. Like, everything that we know about him is that, like, he just doesn't want to go to bed. That's, like, the bottom line with the guy always.
He's fussy.
I'm thinking about the timeline of this, and it's like immediately after the election, there was just radio silence from the National Republican Party, and a lot of people just interpreted it as them selling out Trump. But what I think it actually was they were waiting for whatever dumb shit he was going to come up with that they would then run with.
Yeah, that's been the whole, their job. I mean, that's what it's been for 4 years anyway.
But that shows me, like, that makes me very not afraid of the prospect of this, because it means it's like, oh, they had no plan for this. They had no James Baker on deck. They had no, like, legal processes on deck. They were just like, okay, like, everything has been so whittled down, and everything is such a bad photocopy of a bad photocopy, that instead of a plan that they were going to come up with 3 years ago for this, they were like, all right, let's see what he complains about, and then what he complains about we'll agree with, and then hopefully the judge likes us.
All they could do ever was hope to get an outcome that could be swayable by their intervention in it. And they were all imagining, like everybody does, every general fights the last war, they were imagining a Bush versus Gore situation, mm-hmm. where you've got one case, you've got one batch of votes, and even better, you are like already declared the winner, and like you're intervening to stop a winner from like being that call for being reversed, and then that coming to one court case. This is 15 fucking states or whatever, and state legislatures. And this is a Rube Goldberg contraption, and it's necessitated because he didn't have it wasn't close enough.
Yeah, he didn't do good enough.
It's just that he didn't do good enough for them to have done. And so it doesn't, like, a smart guy with self-respect would recognize that and not try anyway. But because Trump is just operating from pure basal instinct of I'm not owned, he is going to activate it. He's going to hit the domino thing over and start the chain reaction of, like, you know, among his flunkies and media suckers and dipshits who all are like working towards the Fuhrer and their little, you know, pathetic marketing scheme Ponzi ass way. But they're not going to actually be able to do anything because the position doesn't exist where they can intervene.
Yeah, I think that's like the reason that, I mean, the other thing that we're leaving out of this is that, like, the reason that Bush v. Gore worked is that the Republicans had just like this fucking crack A team of vampires who know how to win and know how to like go to court. And I think if this had been closer, it wouldn't have been a problem to get like Ted Olson or like somehow Jim Baker is still alive.
Yeah.
So like whatever, like that, whatever exquisite corpse, like wandering into a courtroom, and like, if they could have won it, those guys would have done it. I don't think that it's like, they're not that offended by Trump that they're going to let.
Right.
No. But yeah, it wasn't close enough, so they're not going to embarrass themselves for him.
The Bush v. Gore people had an A-team that grinded their skills in the bullpen of the Iran-Contra cover-up.
Like, the worst people that their generation produced.
Trump has people who, like, tried to defraud a federal court in an Olestra class action. No,
which was so great to see after the election, too, when there was one story that was, like, Jared Kushner's looking around for a Jim Baker type. And I just thought of him like being on LinkedIn, like searching for everybody that has Svengali and they're like as a job that they've had in the past. Like, they find you, man. Like, it's not somebody that's in your Rolodex that you can just call and be like, this was my dad's tax attorney and like he was so good at tennis.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. Doesn't get you over the line.
The only guy they have like that who was a deep state soldier and Iran-Contra veteran is Bill Barr. And Bill Barr's entire job is to, like, unseal testimony about Nelly Orr.
Yeah.
That's what they put him in charge of.
There is a Felix tweet. This may have been from, like, a deleted account even from back in the day where you said that Trump's lawyers, like, his response to everything is to, like, get mad and then have his lawyer write a letter saying that he's normal. Like, that is basically Bill Barr is now the guy writing the, like, Trump is normal letters.
That's yeah, so Biden won by, Biden won the Electoral College by 36 electoral votes. So for Trump to prevail, he would have to overturn the, you know, actual results in at least three of the closest states. And granted, these states were very close. You know, Biden's margin of victory in these states, less than 1%. This was a pretty close election, actually, in terms of the states, much like 2016 was. And like one of the things that's hindering the Trump campaign overall is there's no coherent legal argument being made, and there's no, you know, sole remedy being requested from the courts. In Bush v. Gore, Bush had a very simple legal strategy. Stop the count. Stop the recount. I won. Yeah. Stop the recount. That's it. Run out the clock, which they did. This time around, it's no. Do the recount in Georgia. Do the recount in Arizona. Right. But stop counting in Pennsylvania and throw out these votes in Wisconsin and throw out these votes. And it's like, what would that even do? You know, if all those cases were merged and just dumped at the Supreme Court, what would they even do with it? Just say, oh, yeah, fine, you win.
The reason you have a guy like John Roberts in the position he is in is to recognize the lay of the land and realize what is a crucial goal and what is a short-term one that can be sacrificed. And there would be no clearer fucking example of when to cut bait than on that.
Yeah.
And to try to force that through on behalf of a guy who is only representative of a personal cult. Like, these guys, there's no Trump project beyond his ego. Like, that, in a real sense, he is not ideological. It is purely about his own ego gratification and his own self-dealing. And it's like that corresponds to a lot of Republican strategies for many reasons. But if there's a conflict, and the conflict between keeping this guy at the expense of, like, having to break an entire, like, you know, legal framework that has allowed for the relatively safe exaltation of social pressures away from political action for the entirety of American history, we're just going to junk that on behalf of this guy.
We now all
have to devote ourselves to just anticipating every colicky fart he comes out of his mouth, or else we're going to get fired, and everyone is, and all of his hooting idiot fans are going to think that we're pedophiles.
Yeah,
because we, like, had a fucking gravy stain on our tie once when he saw us at lunch.
Yeah, and you also have to imagine that the Senate results are also impacting the conservative justices' views on this matter. Because a 50-50 Senate, which is the best the Democrats could do, where Joe Manchin holds the balance of power there under a Biden administration, that's no threat to the conservative judiciary at all. That's fine. They're not going to pack the court. Maybe if it had been, you know, like, I don't know, Democrats just win 58 seats and they say, fuck yeah, we're doing court packing the day after the election, maybe that would change the calculus a little bit.
Oh my God. They're on a glide path to wiping out, to massively expanding their Senate lead and retaking the House in 2022, and then easily defeating the Democrats in 2024.
Yes.
Why the hell would they do this on Trump's behalf?
Yeah. If they stole the election for Trump now, that makes it, that is the most difficult path to a Republican being in power 10 years from now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, that's it.
Why would you, like, destabilize anything? Why would you risk anything for this result when you can hold back and maybe get something that's less of a pain in the ass to deal with? Because, like, Trump had his benefits, but he also was a fucking, he is because of his personal psychosis, a actual impediment to, like, the smooth functioning of systems. And the people who try to, like, squint at Trump and see him as, like, a threat to capitalism, they are recognizing that his specific neuroses and the way that it color his approach to governing means that he actually can get in the way of business as usual sometimes. But what that means is that the Republican Party has no personal loyalty to him and will spit him out at the first convenience.
I think they would. I mean, I wonder in some ways if they're not afraid of him enough at this point, because I think he's going to be very annoying for them over the next few elections. And I think that he's an unstable and, like, you know, in his way, a very dangerous guy. Like, it's hard to predict what he's going to do. But I definitely do get the sense that they're, like, they absolutely would have gone to the wall for him if he had given them a chance to do it. But in this case, it's like, it's throwing good money after bad. Like, and he's still going to be, you know, I mean, like, whatever, this is who he is. He's going to be a bitch about it, and he's going to complain, and he's going to identify people he thought weren't loyal enough. And then he's going to show up in some city in their state and tell a story about like the time that he and Jimmy Connors were like flirting with Suzanne Summers at the same time or something like that. And that'll be him. That's what he does.
Yeah.
And he might very well, you know, like candidates that are more like him might wind up primarying people that weren't loyal enough to him. And I'm sure that would be very annoying for everybody, but like not as annoying it would as be having like to sublimate your entire project to this guy's gratification, which they did. There wasn't even a fucking platform.
Yep.
No, no thing this year. It was just, we support Trump's agenda.
If Trump in exile is like a media figure who, yes, becomes a center for political gravity and creates like a mini people who like run in primaries against establishment Republicans, yes, that's annoying, and it would be a hindrance, but it would be absorbed the same way the Tea Party was.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Tea Party took over the party, really, but then that's just because they merged at the top and like it stabilized. And you like a guy like Marco Rubio came in as a Tea Party firebrand. It's like they didn't sell out. The party did move right, you know, like it is doing the capillary action of pushing the party to the right. And the Trump, like I think on cultural grounds, certainly would push the party right in that direction. But other than that, it would just be absorbing. It'd be absorbed into the Republican Party in general to their benefit.
His impact on the party is going to be stylistic because there's no ideology to speak
of.
And you can see the stylistic element already. It's just like what you're going to get is more like of the like Madison Cawthorn, like these like really like mutant creatures.
Right.
Because the alternative is like all these like 75-year-old former attorneys that are like in the Senate having to go up there and be like, cry more libs. And like, just like,
they can't pull it off. Exactly. They can't do that.
They don't have swag.
Yeah.
And like, the thing is, like, it's easy to say, oh, you lost, you suck. And it is funny that the God Emperor lost to probably the most mentally decimated Democrat.
It is insanely funny. I remind myself of it every day. But it's the funniest.
It's like if Woodrow Wilson had run for re-election in 1920.
Yeah, exactly. But the other thing that Democrats should take note of, and yes, oh, he won by 3 million votes. Oh, that's a lot. This was record turnout, and Donald Trump made it within 3 million votes.
Yeah.
That's not supposed to happen with Republicans.
More turnout is supposed to kill them. That's what I thought. But it turns out his appeal, it's transcendent of all the narrow categories that you're imposing on people who aren't you and assuming exist in them the way they do in you.
And I know a lot of people, like, myself included, have said that if it wasn't for COVID, Trump would have easily won re-election, which is
absolutely
like saying, you know, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln? I mean, COVID did happen, so it's a little hard to. But an addendum to that should be, I totally believe if Trump had just managed to cut one more check before the election, he would have been maybe not been guaranteed to have won, but would have been gotten way close. I mean, it would have been way nicer.
For sure.
The Biden coalition is one of the most fragile, shitty coalitions I've ever seen a Democrat win with.
Awful.
It's incredibly fragile. It's fragile to the point that if you had somebody who got the Trump seal of approval, who people hated 10% less, they stomp him.
Yep.
They fucking stomp him. These Biden's voters, the people that swayed the election for Biden, these hoes are not loyal.
Yeah,
they split their tickets and they voted Republican down ticket because they want to keep their taxes low. They haven't bought into any notions beyond propriety.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So as soon as Trump isn't there, what did Biden fucking run on beyond propriety, though? That was it. And that was the idea. They got the coalition they wanted. It's just that what they want is it's suicide. They just don't realize.
Half
of Biden voters voted against Trump, not for Biden.
And without Trump there, I mean, within politics, like, he'll be there as a carnival barker from the sideline, but that'll give them permission to ignore him if they want to. And then within like the parameters of respectable politics, there's not going to be a Trump there to discipline them, and they're going to reassert their class interests. And that means and the Democrats will have nothing to show for their lurch towards the suburban voters.
As an example of how fragile the Biden coalition is that like it didn't take It took about an hour after the networks officially called it for Biden for every part of that coalition to immediately start fucking yelling at each other about who gets to take credit for him winning. Yep. And I'm sorry, if you're on the left or the progressive side of the Democratic Party, I'd fucking pipe down. I mean, I understand like there's a certain fairness or hypocrisy to the way you're being attacked, but I'd pipe down about taking credit for this one. Because, I mean, think about where the next 4 years are going to go. Are you really going to want...
You don't want...
If you're from, like, the Justice Democrat side of the party, do you really want the narrative to be right now that we were the decisive factor in electing Joe Biden?
In installing Joe Biden? Yeah. Well, I mean, the story that they want to tell now is, you know, about what's next, right? About the idea of the famous moving him left idea. I mean, I think that, like, ideologically, Joe Biden is not moving because ideologically, Joe Biden is, like... It's like when like Homer Simpson has like a dream sequence and it's just like a cow playing like a song on a jug. Do you know the image? It's not a podcast or in a visual medium. Yeah. I'm struggling here, but the
all our listeners immediately know that image, David.
Yeah, good. All right, cool. It's why we love them. But that's not, there's no ideology to speak of. I think that if you push Biden in the direction of like some version of material politics. Like, obviously, he's not going to do Medicare for All or whatever because he's scared of it. And he's just a whip dog after 45 years of being a Democrat in a Republican dominated political scene. I do think that stuff like the, you know, canceling student debt and the raising the minimum wage, it's not perfect. Obviously, there's like, but I think that that's the sort of politics that you can maybe nudge Biden on because of the fact that it's like, it's simple, you can take credit for it. And it can be spun in the ways, these like losing ways, the Democrats have always pitched stuff like that, which is like, you know, like kitchen table families or whatever, just some one of those junior jumble phrases they throw.
How's that going to happen with a Republican Senate or a 50-50 Senate?
I mean, the student debt is executive order.
Yeah, but he's not going to, but Biden has no appetite to go around Congress. He's, even if he does have the prerogative to do that, he's not going to. He's going to say, you know what? We got to work out a deal if we're going to do something like
cut
that.
A deal with James. I would be. I'm not writing it down.
Yeah, I'm not writing it off. But I think it's a pretty slim chance. I would be surprised. And if you do get it,
very focused and very astute. And I have never seen him be either of those things.
I don't think I don't see him taking the Schumer suggestion of writing off $50,000 of everyone's student debt. And if there was a debt write off, I feel like it would be like $10,000 and come with all these weird Kamala Harris type.
Wasn't that what they were talking about today? That it was initially going to be 10, like 50, and now he's like more comfortable with 10 because
it's going to be some,
it's this theater of negotiating with yourself
Arby's
and losing
fucking coupons.
Yeah,
it's going to be. You know,
and he never promised this
off your next $50 off your next college credit.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but correct me if I'm wrong, but he did not promise this. This was not something in their agenda before the election.
Floating. Which
anytime I see stuff like that, I just think about how cool it would be to be there for the moment when Joe Biden finds out that people are talking about this. Because I feel like he doesn't necessarily know, but at some point this is going to land and he's going to be like, I'm sorry, you told people I would do what?
When
like,
Biden realizes those sounds he's hearing are people around him talking, it's going to be real fascinating.
I would say that if he does do any significant student loan forgiveness, it is going to be not because of any pressure from below, but because it is the agreed upon choice among whatever gaggle of technocrat ghouls that he surrounds himself with, that it's the most effective form of economic stimulus that they can apply like quickly to the economy.
Yeah.
Because they are like, everyone recognizes that this is an unsustainable economic system right now. Mm-hmm. There has to be some massive injection of money into the demand sector or this entire thing is going to fucking spin off the wheels. So there's going to have to be a huge, huge amount of Keynesian stimulus into the fucking economy. And that's a quick way to do a lot of it. Or at least that's what they're going to think, and because
they're going to do it,
not genuinely like a redistributive, you know, and it's not something that has to go through Congress. It's something that they could turn a key and do the way that all the stuff in fucking the AMA or the first bailout from Obama, like 2/3 of that was fucking tax cuts. And
they
credits.
Designed it for that too. They wanted it to be clever so people wouldn't know that they were getting more money back.
And
instead
this
of like,
feels like that, like, because the easy answer to how do you do Keynesian stimulus in the system is just give people a ton of money, but give everybody money? I don't know.
Yeah.
That's, skin in the game.
Hey, Matt,
blah,
a lot,
blah, blah,
a lot of
blah.
The, hey, Matt, a lot of those people, and this gets into the way like the Biden coalition is cutting each other's throats right now. The problem with giving everyone money is that some of those everybody's are bad people who voted for Trump.
It's true, they're bad people.
And then, like that, as we've talked about before in the past, man, like politics is about, you know, who has to suffer. And, you know, for a good chunk of the Biden coalition, the idea that the suffering of, you know, of racist, white, you know, Trump voting people would be ameliorated in any way rather than actively increased is anathema to
You want to give everyone money? Don't you realize some people are ne'er-do-wells?
Yeah.
Instead, but, like, you
literally
could...
Literally never going to do well. Why you would you give them money?
Yeah.
You're gonna, you want to give roustabouts money?
Yeah.
Instead, how about you reward the people who did the self-improving act of, like, going to college, maybe, and figuring out how to be good people? Maybe they should be rewarded for that.
Well, I do wonder if... I don't think that they could possibly... do it as badly as they did in 2008 and 2009, though, or 2009.
I
mean, that stimulus.
Well,
like,
I want to get into
that. Really difficult. If anyone could, like, it's these guys.
Yes.
But the idea of burying that stimulus in such a way that people don't even know. I mean, it like you don't want to aspire to anything Trump like, but him sending people like a fucking debit card with a note that says like, "Don't spend it all in one place," Donald J. Trump.
All depends on what the economic picture is going to be in February. It depends on what COVID is going to look like in February, because we know that what needs to happen right now, what should have happened, you know, fucking yesterday or 6 months ago, is you just have to give people money to fucking stay home. That's it. Period. End of sentence.
Yeah.
That's the only thing you can possibly do. Not even thinking about. You know, like trying to keep the economy flow, not even thinking about it as a Keynesian injection, as helicopter money, but just straight up, no, this has to happen or else deaths.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, these are not mere calculations. It's like keeping people home literally is a first order solution to the problem of rampaging pandemic disease.
I mean, I want to switch gears. I mean, because we are talking about like looking forward to a Biden administration and what the Democrats are going to be like. And, you know, we've talked before, we've discussed earlier on in this show that, like, the Republican Party is now basically a personality cult about Donald Trump. Like, the Republican voters are in the bag for Trump 100%. Trump is probably never going to concede. He is most likely going to become some sort of TV personality or anti-president who will just sort of, like, give his own State of the Union address or fucking, you know, be sworn in at Mar-a-Lago, and he'll just be sort of this alternate presidency. And that, like, you know, the Republican Party is going to have to indulge that because their voters love Donald Trump and trust him more than any other politician who's maybe ever lived. The Democrats, however, if that is the case with the Republican Party, we've said it before, I'll say it again now, are free to live their dream, which is govern as a Republican Party of maybe 10 or 20 years ago would be. And to that end, I just want to give just check in briefly on this interview that Barack Obama gave to Jeffrey Goldberg, because let's be honest, the Democratic Party is Barack Obama's party. He's in charge of it. He's in charge 100%. Of it. It's not Biden's party. Barack Obama is the guy. I mean,
he's the embodiment of everything that like they now stand for and believe in.
It's right.
Barf Sacco Crumbo.
It's rap rock's party.
I just want to read here a little bit from this interview. You know, he's talking to Jeffrey Goldberg, and you know, he's going on here and he says, "I certainly don't watch reality shows, and sometimes I'd miss things that were a phenomenon. But I thought there was a shift there. I write about it to some degree. I actually have great admiration for a lot of those traditions, what you were ascribed to be masculine qualities. When you think about the greatest generation, you think about sacrifice." To which Jeffrey Goldberg says, "A colleague of mine says that in some ways you're a never Trump conservative." Obama, rather than saying, "Who is this asshole and what the fuck is he talking about?" says, "I understand that. There's this sense of probity, honesty, responsibility, of homespun values that I admire. That's the Kansas side of me. My grandmother's a stand-in for that. The folks we celebrate at Normandy, including my Uncle Charlie, who was a member of the units that liberated parts of Buchenwald, those were men who, whatever their limits, whatever their constraints in terms of their emotions, because they were told they couldn't feel and couldn't feel and be seen as men, however, their relationship with women was skewed by all this. They sacrificed for others, and they never bragged." And he's going on like this, blah, blah, blah. And then
this is a fucking Tony Soprano monologue.
Yeah. What happened to the...
Running heavily through his nose guy. And be like, "Gary Cooper!"
No, but okay, so Goldberg says here, "You were just surprised by the horse populism wrote in on." And he goes, "Yes. And it's this indication of parts of the of popular culture that I've missed. So he's saying, like, I've been so busy being president, I've missed these disturbing trends in popular culture.
I don't even have a TV. Doesn't Obama write a list every year that he's like,
yes.
All right, guys, here's my 15 favorite drinks.
Yeah, he's got like a fucking Ringer podcast, like ranking Ozark episodes. Like, it's about what you watch on TV, man.
Reality television, that's an oxymoron.
He's talking to fucking Bill Simmons about like doing the Sweet 16 bracket of the best Wire characters, and he goes, let me be clear, Brother Muzone would defeat Proposition Trudeau. One thing I gotta be clear about. No, but he goes on here, and this is very telling here. He says, it's interesting. People are writing about the fact that Trump increased his support among black men in the 2020 presidential election and the occasional rapper who supported Trump. I have to remind myself that if you listen to rap music, it's all about the bling, the women, the money. A lot of rap videos are using the same measures of what it means to be successful as Donald Trump is. Everything is gold plated. That insinuates itself and seeps into the culture. And what I love about this is I guess he is out of touch with popular culture because, I mean, he's talking about the rap music of 15 years ago. Like, if Barack Obama
in a way that in a way that you would do if you were trying to find common ground with, like, Bill O'Reilly 15 years ago.
Or Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, I mean, first of all rap today is done by 19-year-olds who have BPD, and it's about having BPD.
Yeah, all rap music today is about taking... Rap music today is about taking so many pills you can't feel anything, or being a woman who's incredibly horny.
Yeah, those are the two things it's about. But I mean, no one voted for Democrats at the rate that black voters voted for, but there was a completely statistically insignificant amount of black men who voted for Trump, and for whatever exit polls say, we don't know why. Maybe it was stimulus, maybe it was something else, who knows? But there's instantly this recrimination about how, it's because they're rapists like Donald Trump and they only care about bling. It's like, didn't 80% of black men still vote Democrat? How much is enough? How much is enough for Democrats who do nothing for these voters?
But,
this is the most entitled fucking bullshit I have ever... If I was someone who voted Democrat in every election since 2008, why would I still... This is how they treat me?
But the thing is that's the only response they can have. They have to break... Like, they have to say, we're the Democrats. We're the good people. And then when what's like, well, some of these good people aren't being good anymore. It's like, well, that's because they're bad now. And you say, well, that's no way to fucking try to keep your coalition together. The only way they can keep their coalition together is through fucking disciplining and chiding people.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. So, like, when things start going bad and you see someone drifting away, you yell at them.
Yeah, again, presumably thinking that they'll come back. Any material politics, what you're talking about is, like, it's stylistic. It's like, are you, like, the bombastic guy that's constantly up there, like, talking about his dick and balls? Or are you up there being, like, reading one of those, like, in this house, we do hugs, we do believe science posters? Like, that stuff, to me, like, if that's the alternative, like, you're going to lose a lot. Not just because you're not offering people stuff, but because it's fucking annoying. It's fucking
lame. Understand. I'm sorry. I understand the appeal.
But I mean, if you go,
you would want to do it.
If you go on in this Jeffrey Goldberg interview, and I'm not because I don't want to kill myself. But like, you know, Barack Obama goes on to critique like sort of Trump's conception of masculinity. And he says it's sort of surprising to me that Trump is considered sort of like the Gary Cooper character because, you know, correctly, as we've identified before, I mean, he's possibly the whiniest bitch in human history.
Yeah.
I mean, like Felix, like you just said, like his tweets now after losing the election are just, I won the election. And then the next tweet is like, if I killed myself, no one would care.
There'd be a fucking parade if I died right now.
Guess
I have a headache.
Did you see the one where he goes, I hope the future historians remember that all this good COVID news happened under my term.
Yeah.
Don't forget me. They made a vaccine under me. Don't forget my spirit.
Donald Trump, since the election, his message has been, don't abandon me. Are you abandoning me? And I'm cutting my bangs. And I think next semester I'm going to apply to RISD again, even though my ex who gaslighted me about giving me a UTI goes there.
Yeah, no, he's
just,
like,
you followed
I him. Just took a bunch of pills.
It's the it's the vaccines that got small, not me.
Yeah.
I'm ready for my close-up, Mr.
Trying to
Pfizer.
Pad his stats with good COVID news is incredible. Like fucking Ricky Davis chasing a triple-double and losing by 30 points. Dude, like...
Yeah, no, but as Obama goes on, he just talks about how, you know, Trump actually is a you know, is a parody of traditional masculinity, because, you know, he never admits wrong. He never takes responsibility. He never stoically accepts, you know, the responsibility for the fate of the world and the things that he's done. And my response to that is, like, neither do you, asshole. You're out here blaming Lil Wayne for why fucking Democrats can't fucking
take up. He never did a goddamn thing wrong. Every choice he made was the right one.
Do you think he would ever say, like, gee, maybe I should have bailed out homeowners rather than fucking Goldman Sachs?
He said, I don't know if it was that interview or another one he did to promote his book. He said, when asked, you know, why don't you fucking put anyone from Wall Street in prison? He said, well, I didn't want to destabilize society, but I'll leave it to others to judge whether that was smart or not.
Okay, I will. I'm judging him for that.
Yeah, we judge him.
It sucked.
But
fucking sucked, dude.
But I think this goes back to what we were saying about the stylistic differences between Trump and Obama, and that being what he's responding to here, is that for him, it's like when he capitulates or when he does something wrong, it's because he knows he has some reasoning in his head for why it was impossible for him to do anything else. And I think with Trump, there's not ever a reason why he does it beyond what the most obvious one is. And I think that if you're somebody who's dedicated your whole life to this kind of like wised up version of compromising and negotiating with yourself, as Obama has, I think a lot of leading Democrats have, you would be offended by this guy like just openly cutting deals for his buddies or like sending someone a check so they vote for him or whatever. Like, that just seems gauche. And that's not, regardless of whether it is or isn't, like, you have to recognize that it is real, that it has impacts on people, and that also, like, not everybody is going to be as impressed with your intellect as you are. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to give them something to show them that it's working. You can't just be like, trust me, I've read 100,000 books.
He read all the posts. just watch The Wire, okay? You know, absorb some culture. Watch some of my Netflix specials, and you will come to understand why it could be no other way. Like, Biden, like, Obama's post-presidency thing, it really is like, he got, like, maybe he did believe in something one time in his life, and he got the fucking, maybe it was right up until the moment he got elected president. I don't think so, but maybe then he got the fucking, the Ned Beatty speech. And it just cooked his brain, and he decided, well, I got to do this, and now I'm going to spend the rest of my life convincing you all why I had to do it.
But,
I'm
going
to put my cultural tendrils out to massage your brain into thinking there is no other alternative than this,
because this is
a fallen world, and this is all we can scramble out of it.
But looking at it overall about, like, you know, liberals and Democrats who are very disturbed by the prospect that Trump and his millions of supporters will essentially never, ever believe that this was a legitimate election or accept Joe Biden as president. Well, what the fuck did they do for the last 4 years other than just obsess over that, like, Russia stole the election and that there are active measures and Trump's an asset and that Russian hacking actively changed voter rolls in states? And then, like, you know, they had their pussy march, and now Trump has had his pussy march this weekend. I mean, obviously, like, vastly more, significantly more sparsely attended than the original pussy march.
A different energy.
A different energy.
You mean
here,
the women's march?
Yeah.
You keep calling it the pussy march.
Yeah, the hats were the pussy hats. I don't think they like it when you do that.
Yeah.
The pussy march.
Jesus. Like, Jesus, man. Jesus, Will, we've got full MGTOW.
Yep. Wow.
Yeah, Will Corolla. Yeah. You know, they had their pussy march.
Do you remember the 2017 Femoid March?
Hey, you fellas know what I'm talking about. And hey,
come on, man.
The MAGA guys are pussies too, okay? And as long as you're talking about pussies, I mean, the one thing I really will revel in is all of the conservative commentators and TV personalities who are using this moment now to be like, the hate and mockery that supporters of Donald Trump are feeling right now is really not okay.
It's unfair to
there is
lived experience.
We don't even get anything new in this culture, because the Trump people are just doing what Democrats did. Like, they're literally making posts where they're like, I have never been more disgusted with Joe Jorgensen voting. Like, it's literally the same shit. It's when Hillary voters were like, take some time to think about how the women in your life have been murdered, like in 2016. Like, Trump people are doing that. We're going to relive the same four events for our entire lives, but just like 1 year the fucking conservatives will do it, and then 1 year liberals will do it.
It is frustrating that they didn't stick with their shit longer too. The idea that like somebody that's got like not flags on their boat, because I don't know what people put on boats, but flags on their car. When you reach that level of being like just absolutely Trump brain, that you've got like the fucking like somehow don't tread on me, but also the Blue Lives Matter flag flying from the back of your F-150. Yeah. Like I'm not owed that. That person is not owed like some deference while they like remove their flags and replace them with different flags, or like, you know, they like take down Blue Lives Matter and put up Ohio State and they're like, well, this is it. This was difficult for me. Like that person's an asshole. Like I'm allowed to laugh at that shit. Like there's not, it's not like their hopes and dreams were dashed. Their whole thing was that like somebody else would beat someone they don't like up for them.
Yes.
And I guess like now they have to wait a little while before that happens again. Like, I'm sorry about it, but
and obviously like, you know,
and they'll get the complaint about it until that happens.
And obviously like every outcome that's produced by the American political system is bad and getting worse, but like, you know, all these people, like the Republicans who were like, if we allow Joe Biden to win this election, Republicans will literally never win an election again. And it's like, they said that shit about Obama. And then when Trump won, everyone said it, like, the Democrats will never win again. And it's just like, no, it like they'll just, you know, obviously everything will continue to get worse. The system is already vastly, vastly weighted in favor of the right wing and of this country. But it's just like, you know, they're just going to trade off. Everything's going to, it's going to be the fucking same. It doesn't, like,
it
calm
is
down.
Funnier. When they do the most important election of our lifetime shit, though, it's funnier to me. When they do it, when they're like, this is literally good versus evil. Like, this fat guy who acts like a Broadway producer and, like, and is awake for 80 hours at a time. And then, like, the guy that wants to declare it National Mustang Day every day. This is the most important election that we've ever faced.
Yeah, it's like I every election for the rest of our lives will be called the most important election.
Yeah.
And it's like that stopped working on me when I turned 18. Like if this was the most important election of our lifetime, why is it Joe Biden?
Yes.
Right.
Why did you give him that job?
How are these the two competitors for this office if this office means what you say it does?
I can't get past
that. It does not make sense, sir. It does not add up.
This is the most important election in our lifetimes. This is why we've selected a guy who gave himself brain damage in 1963 for combing his hair too hard.
I can't get over it. It's so reckless. Like the idea of like if you take it as seriously as that, shouldn't you try a lot harder? Not just try harder than Biden, but try harder in terms of like what you're offering people. Like you shouldn't be instantly like sort of dampening expectations and like sort of like pre-running some recrimination monologues about like who didn't vote for you enough so that you'd have a justification in case you lost.
But that's
like,
because
but everything now is outsourced. Everything that we have now, one of the reasons everything is so bad is that everything has been outsourced to the individual or private corporations. Like in the same way that like now if you're down on your luck, if you're underemployed or unemployed, instead of the state taking care of you, you have to get a job with Grubhub or Uber. It's your responsibility to look after yourself if you fall through the cracks.
Yep.
The most important election is not a reflection on what the Democrats or if you're Republican, what the Republicans should have done. It's a reflection on you.
Yep.
It is more reason for you to accept what they give you. It's outsourced to you. The work of performing the most important election is your job. And that's why after every fucking election now, the liberal media's job is to try to trick all the races into fighting each other over who's the best at voting for Democrats.
Yep. Yep.
What have you done for us lately?
Yep.
It's like the fucking mafia out there.
Well, I mean, it's because the – because everything has been outsourced, all amelioration of misery has been outsourced. There can be no – when you're voting, you're not voting to make good things happen. You're only voting to decide who bad things will happen to.
Yes.
Like that's it. And so all these things – all these elections do is determine how you're going to get your creepy political voyeuristic thrills the next 4 years.
Yeah, or the aesthetics of how the same, more or less the same bad things are going to happen in terms of this, like what shape and what tone the compromises that like whittle away at whatever agency and independence you have.
And as long as we're talking about the fact that, you know, everyone's going to be doing driving for Lyft or delivering groceries or whatever. I mean, how many people mentioned either working on the Biden transition team or whose names have been floated for possible cabinet positions have been directly working for Uber, Lyft, or Amazon over the last 4 years.
Did you see that with Prop 30 in California? That like the guy that was like that ran Uber's communication thing there was like literally the head of the Department of Transportation under Obama.
Yeah, he was a guy.
Yeah, Anthony Fox. Yep.
And I gotta say though, out of all the names being floated for a Biden cabinet, the one that I am fucking most excited for is fucking Meg Whitman to be Secretary of Commerce.
Yeah.
Yes. A Republican whose previous job, like a line item on her fucking LinkedIn profile was CEO of QB. Yeah. QB.
Well, it's not just even QB. It was QB. She ran Hewlett Packard into the ground. And she spent like $30 million of her own money eating shit in a gubernatorial election.
Yeah.
That means no more Department of Commerce after that.
I mean, just like the most failing upward loser you could imagine.
There's not, even in business, it is very difficult to find somebody with that trajectory. Like, it's basically college football coaches are the only people that are allowed to serially fuck up jobs, leave with like massive golden parachutes, and then just like get another one.
There's one other. Donald fucking Trump. Maybe that's the thinking. It's like, we need our own, and what's the closest we have? Meg Whitman. Oh, it's just all the fail with none of the success, none of the win. Yeah. Just the fail parts.
I mean, Meg Whitman is, that's a good insight, because what are the Democrats' only idea is what California is, which is the EU without a safety net.
Yeah.
Their only designs for the future is a European Union, as far as, you know, there will be hate speech laws that, you know, in America, that means hate speech is criticizing Israel or insulting cops. You'll have your favorite vape flavors banned. You can't buy soda. Is there a safety net? No. Is there health care? No. Are there labor protections? No.
This is the perverse thing with this, too, is that, like, I think there's this idea, and I mean, I certainly have written about it. Like, I've thought about it myself, like, that the main threat of the Trump presidency was to institutions. And we need institutions. And I think we do need institutions. But I think that there's also this sense that, like, what I take away from the 4 years most is not that, like, these institutions survived or were destroyed or whatever, but just the extent to which, like, the rot of them and the way in which either they don't do their job or they've been co-opted to actively do the opposite of what was ostensibly their job. That, like, those things, they've survived, like, in the same way that, like, the upper tier of, like, the Democratic Party decision makers have survived, like, into their 80s, still doing the same shit. But that, like, that's more disheartening to me. The idea of, like, especially when you look at the way that Biden sort of codes what he's trying to do in this presidency, it's about undoing and restoring and whatever. And, like, we wouldn't be here if these institutions worked, first of all. But second of all, like, the way that they work now, the idea of, like, turning the clock back 4 years or 10 years or whatever, like, it's not enough. Like, they haven't worked in so long, and it's so clear now that it's very difficult to have faith even in those. Did I stop the conversation?
Yeah.
And do more.
I know. I just remembered that one of the people on Biden's transition team who's, like, vetting things was that woman who, I don't know if you remember, this is from, like, a long time ago, but she was one of these, like, Democratic Party think tank people who went out of her way to defend Elliot Abrams when people were like, Kelly Magsman. She was like, I worked for Elliot Abrams. We have our differences, but he's a good man and a patriot. I mean, you're talking about someone who is, like, personally responsible for unspeakable massacres. Unspeakable atrocities.
The best book on the massacres that Elliot Abrams oversaw is like 120 pages long. It's so short that I have read it myself. The idea that, like, you could, like, it's two New Yorker stories. Like, he's not a good man. He might be patriotic, but, like, you can't look at what that track record is and be like, because he was kind to you at Capitol Grill in 2012. He's somehow something other than the sum of his actions.
Elliot Abrams is one of the best cases for the concept of prisons.
Yeah.
but not necessarily their execution. Certainly the concept.
Well, there we go, guys. The Biden administration coming up, and the Trump anti-Biden administration also going to be very strong.
Looking forward to the Avignon Trumpacy.
Yeah, and then, you know what? And if you're not happy with Biden as president, you know, and you're venting online about it, I would just suggest that maybe you get out of the intellectual bubble that you've cultivated for the last 4 years and maybe like understand that this whining, all this whining is how you got Joe Biden as president.
I can't wait to see the Republican Sarah Cooper.
All our buddies are coming back. This is going to be very exciting. The thing that
it's going to be an exact copy. Like, who's the Republican equivalent to Josh Gad?
Oh God,
John Voight. It's gonna be, John Voight.
John Voight. John Voight is going to do a front facing video where he's like, "Hey, it's okay to cry sometimes."
Robert Davi's doing it, but he's like just constantly plugging his new album of standards. The thing I'm really looking forward to, if it happens, which I don't think it will, is if Trump tries a cable channel. Because every time he's tried to make a TV show in the past, and it's like, it's clear that that's the only thing that he reveres is television. Yes. And like every time he's done it, it's just played like an infomercial for like lawns. Or like just like sort of just like landscaped large properties.
I want him to make it because like I am a man of many principles, but those principles run out when you give me $5 million. And I would develop shows for the Trump Network, high tier cable dramas, and we're talking Ray Donovan, but Ray Donovan is investigating Obamagate.
Ooh.
Everyone would watch that.
I do feel like we're missing out on like Trump coded entertainment. Like that was emerging as like a parallel space where like Christy Swanson was getting the career she deserved all along. And I feel like that might be short circuited now.
David, I'm imagining Robert Davi lip syncing to Joe Biden speeches, but then like breaking halfway into it, just going in and out of lip syncing Biden speeches and lip syncing Mack the Knife.
Yeah, it's going to be very like, Fly Me to the Moon. Like he's wearing a hat, but like somehow he's in a Mustang. That's the whole bit. It's hard to tell exactly what he's trying to communicate.
Well, I think about that. That just about wraps it up for us today. I want to thank our guest, David Roth. Always a pleasure, David.
Thanks for having me, man.
People want more Roth in their life. Where should they go?
Defector.com. You can subscribe to it. Sorry, you have to subscribe to it, but I promise it's good. And then the Distraction podcast I do with Drew McGarry. If you want to hear me stammering more because we record in the morning, I can't recommend that highly enough.
And before we depart for today, we have a holiday-themed merch drop coming to you. Chris, speak on it, homie.
Yes, we have new merch up at shop.chapotraphouse.com. This is restocks of a bunch of old stuff and things that I've wanted to get in our shop for a long time, including, finally, baseball caps with the Reaper logo and some very cool enamel pins and new colorways of some of the old shirts. That's shop.chapotraphouse.com. And we also wanted to say that we will be donating a portion of the proceeds through the end of the year to various homeless support services in New York and LA. So you can know that at least some of your purchase goes to a good cause and not our continued degeneracy.
Although some of it will be contributing to that.
Yes,
yeah. Just to be clear. Just to be clear. All right. Well, till next time, guys.
Bye-bye.
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 Thanks. Bye. Thing I'm gonna tell myself.